Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. Hope all is good with you and yours. And from a purely footballing perspective, why would it not be after a 4-0 win over Everton last night?
Zinchenko and Ketia. Perfect. There is a gorgeous arrogance about Arsenal now.
It really is. They are enjoying every second of this.
Very few football matches are uncomplicated, and there were certainly some moments in the first half where Arsenal struggled a little bit, but the second half, the way we just dominated and got on top of the game after the two goals just before halftime, controlled that second half, played Everton off the park, and thoroughly deserved a 4-0 win. And the fact that this was our game in hand, a game we really, really had to win, makes it all the sweeter. And we've got plenty to get into in this particular podcast. Just to sort of clarify what's going on in terms of the podcast schedule, because of the way this season is panning out, I think there is, in the aftermath of a game, a real desire for discussion and debate and just content, right? So rather than wait until Friday, I thought it would be a good idea to do a podcast today. It's not an Arsecast Extra. James, I assume he's off having another meeting with his Steve Martin-esque dentist.
You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing pain.
But when you're good and when you're winning games and when it's enjoyable and when you win the way we won last night, I think it's important to get something out today. So this podcast, this Arsecast, will take the place of the regular Friday Arsecast, but I don't want to leave anyone in the lurch on Friday either. And as a gesture of my goodwill and love to all of you, in the week that Arseblog turned 21, the website was 21 this week, I will make our Patreon preview podcast for the Bournemouth game free to everybody to listen to this week. So that'll be available at some time on Friday afternoon for you guys. Keep an eye on Twitter and all the usual places. I'll probably drop it on the main podcast feed, so it'll just show up in your podcast app as normal. So there you go. You get a podcast today and an unexpected bonus podcast tomorrow as well. Do remember, if you would like to support us on Patreon, you can do that by going to patreon.com/Arseblog, sign up, you get this preview podcast, you get all the extra bonus content that we produce every single month for all our wonderful Patreon subscribers. So there you go. Right, we don't have James, but we do have another James, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the show from CBS Sports, it's James Benge. Hello to you.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Obviously, in part because of Arsenal's 4-0 win over Everton last night. The other part I won't talk about live on air. It's none of anyone's business. So there you go. How are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed a quite excellent game of football last night, I have to say. It was it had a little bit of everything, didn't it? A bit of tension followed. And that's kind of what you want, is you don't want just to win 5-0 in the first 20 minutes. Like, give yourself a little bit of delayed gratification. And then when it comes, it's oh so sweet.
Well, listen, I will not object at all if Arsenal feel like going 5-0 up on Saturday against Bournemouth. Yeah. Let me just put that out there for the record. Because I do think it's fair when we talk about this game to analyse the first half and maybe the first 40 minutes. Because at the 40-minute mark, I did not envisage Arsenal going in 2-0 up. And I was thinking to myself, I was sort of like watching the game, doing the live blog, half composing my halftime tweet. What do I say about this? What do I say about this performance? And I was thinking about saying something like, I feel like, you know, based on what we've seen in this first half, it may well be the substitutes, the bench that has a significant role to play in deciding this game. Because, you know, we do have options on the bench now, and it wasn't really working the way we would have liked. I mean, did you or do you sense or did you sense, you know, going into this, after the draw against Newcastle, which was hard, difficult game, after the draw against Brentford, which was another really difficult game, and after the defeat to Manchester City, there was maybe just a bit of nervousness at home because of everything that's going on, the pressure, the season, this being the game in hand. Maybe the last few games have not been quite what Arsenal would have liked at home, and that maybe played into that first half performance. You know, much as it might pain me, I think you have to give Everton a bit of credit as well. They did stay very organized, very well disciplined. They made it as difficult as they could for us, like they did at Goodison Park, and we were struggling a bit to find the answers.
Yeah, it's funny when you go through those recent results at home, it has been a sticky patch at the Emirates, and I think, you know, Arsenal was. I don't necessarily think that's affected the atmosphere. I have to say, wasn't at the ground, so it's, for once, it's a bit harder to make a judgment call pre-match. But I think it's natural for supporters and everyone, and I've felt this at other games, that after a little while, everyone starts to sort of imagine what might happen. You know, I think back in before the World Cup, and even in, you know, in December and January, there was just a real sense of, look, let's enjoy this. Maybe people didn't quite believe it was going to last. And if that's the case, I think that's totally understandable, given the team that Arsenal are fighting for the title. But now I think it seems pretty clear that, like, they might not win the title, but they don't seem like a team that's going to fade before the final few furlongs. And look, that's, you know, that inspires tension in the ground, doesn't it? Everyone knows when you're at the top of the Premier League that those drop 2 points against Burnley, they could be critical, and that you don't want another repeat of that. Mm. Like you said, I think, you know, when we look at all those games, the truth is that what really happened is an opponent came up against Arsenal and played pretty much brilliantly. I think, you know, Brentford and Newcastle in particular, I thought City weren't by their own standards, but they did a fantastic job of spoiling for Arsenal, making it extremely difficult. And Everton did that so well as well. To an extent, and, you know, whether it's from an Arsenal viewpoint or actually just wider in football, we don't tend to celebrate defensive football in the way we perhaps did, you know, before the Premier League became the biggest, most glamorous league in the world. I think there's almost a view that if we are that, every team should be willing to come out and attack and play possession football, look to have 70% of the ball. Everton didn't want to do that. What they did do was set up extraordinarily well in a bank of four and a bank of five, counter-attack with, I thought, some fairly promising pace and purpose. And look, if they had cutting edge in that team, I think they would have been leading. Neil Mope had two really good chances. And I thought, for me, that, you know, and this was the thing I was writing about yesterday, the contrast between Arsenal and so many other teams in the Premier League is they have that player in Bukayo Saka that I'm sure we'll come to talk about, who just needs one moment where you fall asleep, one moment where you slip up, and he will kill you for it. At the other end, Arsenal have these players that make up superbly for the mistakes of others. Most notably, I thought Gabriel was outstanding yesterday, possibly my man of the match, because that's at 40 minutes is a long period of the game. It was a moment where the tension was rocketing, where Everton had this belief, played really good counter-attacking defensive football. And he was just the man that stood between that and a really awkward situation. And I think if Everton had got a goal, that game would have looked incredibly different.
Could well do. Yeah, I mean, I remember the West Ham game when West Ham went ahead, but that felt a little bit different from the current scenario in which we find ourselves. And, you know, you mentioned 2 points dropped against Burnley earlier. It's Brentford, obviously, but I understand why Burnley's in your mind. let's say that. And I watched an interview with Ben White afterwards. I think it was on Super Sport, which is a channel out of Malaysia. He was being interviewed by David Bentley. It was one of the people, and he talked about, you know, how Everton have all the tricks of the trade. They want to slow the game down. They want to slow you down. They want to make life difficult for you. So you're not playing your natural game. And Arsenal want to play more quickly and move the ball more quickly through the spaces, et cetera, et cetera. But then, you know, you get to that 40-minute mark. And I think you're right to point out that Everton did have moments. There was one brilliant Gabriel tackle in particular, which was quite important in the grand scheme of things. But there's something about this Arsenal team that is hard to quantify, because we all understand the way Mikel Arteta, or I think we think we understand the way Mikel Arteta wants the team to play, right? But Alexander Zinchenko is ostensibly Arsenal's left back, right? He picks the ball up in midfield. He dribbles past a couple of players into the right half space in midfield. Then he plays a pass to Gabriel Martinelli, who is Arsenal's left winger, who is basically in the same position over on the right-hand side. The ball goes to Ben White, comes back to Zinchenko. He spots Bukayo Saka, makes the pass, and we can talk about Saka in a few moments. But how, when you are someone like Everton, when you're well-drilled, well-organized, well-disciplined, how do you deal with that kind of chaotic movement? Because, like, if you're the right back, where does Seamus Coleman go there? Does he follow Martinelli all the way over? You know, who is the right midfield? I think it was Iwobi, was it? You know, does he follow Zinchenko all the way into midfield? There is this sort of unpredictability, a kind of predictable unpredictability, if you like, that Zinchenko is doing some crazy shit that turns out to be fantastic. But even if you know as an opposition side that this is what they're going to try and do, stopping it is another thing entirely.
Yeah, not least because, you know, these are players that all ask different, you know, maybe not fundamentally different, but variations on the same question to an Everton defender. And I think in that move, you can almost sort of see, is it Mikalenko just sort of looks and goes, you know, what the fuck do I do with this guy? You know, this is, I'm here dealing with Saka, who's, you know, predominantly left foot. He's going to be attacking me on my right foot. Now I've got Martinelli. Saka is, because it's, when you kind of, when I think when we try and explain it, it sounds chaotic. But there is a clear organisation and rhyme and reason. And it has to be said, even when Nketiah was in the team, I thought most notably against Brentford, Martinelli was starting this ever-growing drift out wide to the right. I think on that occasion, they were really trying to use Xhaka and Zinchenko pinned further out to the left. I mean, this always changes move by move. And I think part of it is merely just the synchronicity, the flow of a team that's played so many games together. They know what gaps to plug. Was Xhaka centre forward for that particular move as well? And you've got Trossard, what is it, paint on his boots on the left flank as well. I think the challenge is that it's not as chaotic as it sounds. And these players are so used to giving and going and moving at lightning fast pace. I don't know how you defend that beyond just having so many bodies back that the passes aren't on. And I think in that particular move, I think it probably reflects a sort of mental fatigue on Everton's part that they've spent 40 minutes reacting to the moments that Martinelli's come across to the right, the Trossard has gone out to the left wing, that basically there's a moment where they go, oh, fuck, left that big spot right on the right corner of the penalty area. It's Bukayo Saka there. They ask so many questions. And I think what we have to remember when we look back on the Brentford games, the Newcastle games, it was just that those teams answered the questions Arsenal asked of them. That's really hard. And you've got to play really well to even do it for 40 minutes, let alone 90.
Yeah, I've got a still here. I'm just looking at it. It is, you know, Martinelli in the right wing position, the left back in central midfield in the Odegaard position. Saka is in maybe the inside right. And then you've got Odegaard, Xhaka is a centre forward, Trossard outside him. I mean, that is, even if you stay in your banks of four or five or whatever it is, it's like, well, where are they going to go from here and who goes with them? And that brings us to what happens when Zinchenko plays the pass to Bukayo Saka. The first touch is fantastic with his left foot onto his right foot. I'm having none of the, well, a goalkeeper shouldn't be beaten at his near post. Absolutely none of that, because there's an angle that you see in the replay from behind where the pace and precision of this, like you're literally talking an inch or two at most that shaves the post and, you know, flies beyond the goalkeeper into the roof of the net, rustles the roof of the net. Bukayo Saka went to the corner flag, did his Thierry Henry tribute celebration, right? And I don't want anyone to come at me by saying, I'm not saying Bukayo Saka is the new Thierry Henry or anything like that. But there are games where special players or top talent can produce something in an instant that changes the complexion of a game. And we talked about the Zinchenko pass and the Arsenal movement and how good all of that is. But without the finish, without the movement and the finish from Bukayo Saka, it, you know, I don't mean to say it means nothing, but, you know, this is what you've got to finish that with. It's an unbelievable goal. It's an unbelievable finish from a player of 21 years of age. 19 goal contributions. It could be more, actually, 11 and 9. It's 20 goal contributions in all competitions this season from Bukayo Saka. He's 21 years of age. And you just need players like that to blow the bloody doors off, if we're going to make it the Italian job type thing. What he's doing this season is just sensational, isn't it? It's hard to quantify exactly what kind of influence he's having on this team, because it goes well beyond what he's actually produced, the goals, the assists. It is the fact that the opposition look at him and go, oh, fuck, how can we deal with this? Because he's the kind of player who kills you in an instant. And that's so, so rare.
I think you're really right to hit on the Thierry Henry comparison. And I suspect Thierry Henry might well agree with that as well. And he was not the only one, and that's the reason why this Arsenal team were invincibles. But when Henry was at the club, you know, this is a world-class performer, upper echelon. I mean, frankly, the best player in the world. Saka's not that at the moment. But it's that thing about the truly global elite, the best players in the Premier League and, by extension, the world. They are the ones that, when you make half a mistake, it is punished to the maximum capacity. Mm. That is the level of Robin van Persie at his greatest. I'm going to try not just to name the ones that left in horrible circumstances. Henry, you know, those sorts of forwards. And I think you have to have Saka at that level. I mean, De Bruyne was the other one a few weeks ago. Arsenal made a mistake. It's normally those sorts of things go unpunished, but he manages to hook on the run this beautiful goal. Similarly with Saka, you know, Everton do make a mistake, but they scramble and they recover. And I think you see on that replay that Mykolenko is moving quickly to close it down. And so Saka has to take it on his right foot. There isn't time to sort of take a touch, open his body and bend it in the far corner. And like you say, look, if Pickford had got a fingertip on that ball, the fingertips ending up in the net as well as the ball, it's rollocked into the top right-hand corner. There's nothing Pickford can do about it. And that's what world-class talent does. You give it an opening and it exploits it. And I think, look, that's, you know, Saka is one of the best players in the world. There's no sense debating it. I would put him in the, you know, the very highest echelon of Premier League footballers. And he's doing all this at 21. I think to an extent, his youth almost becomes this thing that means we devalue his qualities because we assume he's not the finished product. He might be, like, because a lot of players don't get better than this, and this is a world-class level. Whether he's got room to grow or not, you know, only he really knows. But what I know for certain is that right now Arsenal have one of the sort of best half dozen footballers in the Premier League, one of the best dozen in the world. I would quite probably, it's the sort of thing you say that you don't enjoy, but I feel like I would quite enjoy ranking players that I think are better than Bukayo Saka, and I feel like I would run out
pretty really quickly. Yeah.
Really, really quickly. This guy is phenomenal, and it's, I think, frankly, it's a matter of time before we talk about him if he's, you know, and he's signing the contract and everything, so hopefully the time is there.
Mm.
It's a matter of time before we talk about him on the level of Henry, Bergkamp, Wright, whoever these players are that mean the most to you and the, that you think are the greatest in Arsenal history, if he carries on at the level he's at right now.
For sure. And the fact that he's come via the academy and through the academy just adds that little bit of extra flavour to it. You know, it's just so enjoyable watching him and watching him develop and dealing with all the things you have to deal with as a Premier League player. You know, it's really, really tough to do it at the top level, to do it at the highest level, you know. And I think he, we've talked about this, you know, the physical aspects of some of the treatment he gets, you know, he never lets it rustle him. He never lets it really get on top of his game. Like we saw him a couple of weeks ago react at Aston Villa. And I was really glad to see that because you also need that bit of edge. You need that bit of bastardry, you know, to be a really top class player. Henry had it. Bergkamp had it. Vieira had it. Even Pires, to an extent, he was maybe a bit more subtle about it. But they all have that. They all have that unwillingness to be pushed around by some lump at left back or center half or whatever it might be, you know. And he's developing that on top of the contributions he's making. And, of course, you know, he was alive and alert to the fact that Idrissa Gueye was dilly-dallying on the ball. Poked the ball through to Martinelli. Martinelli scores. VAR, which of course we all love, you know, ruled the goal onside. But again, it's the anticipation that he has in the final third to just sort of, well, look, we'll see. We'll pounce. We'll try and force a mistake. The mistake was there. And like you say, it was ruthlessly punished by both Saka and Martinelli.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite excellent. And like you say, I think to an extent, Saka, I mean, it's hard to sort of call because Gueye's taking much too much time on the ball there and he really needs to get rid. But I think there's also this thing where you feel Saka breathing down the back of your neck. You know, if you go and look at his metrics, he ranks so high for things. And this is, again, what makes him incredibly special as a forward player. He ranks so high on things like pressures, interceptions, tackles. The thing that still stands out to me is one of the best moments I've seen from Saka. I want to say it was, I should remember it better, as I think it's one of the best moments he said, but I want to say it was the Villa game where he's crocked, he's been kicked left, right and centre, he's angry, and Villa are on a counter and he's hurtling back, like on one leg, doing everything he can to block off those lanes. And I think that's another thing, you know, that's representative of the attitude, not just of him, I think, but of this whole team. And I thought there were so many other occasions where you would see in that early 40 minutes, you'd see the whole Arsenal team scramble back and just about quell out a dangerous counter. But yeah, it's I think it's just a really sloppy moment from Everton, again, that's punished to the maximum by Arsenal. And fair play to VAR, for once. I thought they actually carried out that review quite effectively and it was done in about a minute. I can't speak for what it's like in the stadium, and I know there are plenty that just would be happy to get rid of the whole thing. I think we do kind of, we should expect this as the standard, but I think it so infrequently hits that it's worth noting out that, like, this is what we want from VAR, that it quickly checks, it makes a decision, and we can just move on with our lives. We don't spend 3 minutes hanging around waiting for someone to check the check what star sign.
Exactly. The thing is, at home, you know, we at least get a few replays and we can see and we can make our own judgments. And the minute they put in the close-up, I was like, oh, this is a goal. This has to be a goal because he's onside. And look, 2-0 obviously changes the complexion of a game. Like I said at the start, I wasn't expecting to be 2-0 up. And it gives you a very solid, if not necessarily 100% comfortable lead. But I think it was necessary and important for Arsenal to try and shake some of those shackles off. You know, whatever nervousness the team was feeling, those two goals I was hoping would then, you know, release them a bit. And I think that happened in the second half. The other thing that I think we have to talk about in terms of the second half is the introduction of Thomas Partey ahead of Jorginho. And I'm not saying this as a way to do down Jorginho, who's been, you know, good in the last number of games. But Partey's influence on that second half was sensational. I think he was absolutely key to the control and dominance that Arsenal had. The way he moved the ball more quickly through midfield, when you get a half a second extra to make a pass, it starts to pull the opposition around the place. And Everton really weren't at the races in the second half. I know there was a moment when McNeil had a shot and Ramsdale made a good save. Wasn't brilliant defending from Arsenal. But overall, the second half was well controlled. Arsenal played them off the park, and I think Partey played a huge role in that.
Yeah, I think one of the things Everton had done really well in those first 40 minutes was to apply the pressure to Jorginho to challenge him to whether it's burst past the Everton press or just know where the pass is. And it's natural in both cases. We know he doesn't have a great burst of pace, but also he isn't necessarily fully on the wavelength in the same way that Partey is, where he would just know if I hit the ball here. And he tries, and we've really seen some excellent interlinking with Saka. We saw some of that, but it was just a little overcooked, a slightly off day for Jorginho. But Partey just adds that little bit of press resistance to the Arsenal midfield, doesn't he? You can't just overpower him physically. You can't make your mark on him in the way that Onana maybe did on Jorginho in the first half. And I think we also have to caveat that by saying I think Everton's heads were very much at, we've got Nottingham Forest this weekend, let's not do anything daft, let's not dive in, get embarrassed by Partey and maybe pick up a red card. But he fit into that system like a glove, like we knew he would. And I think that's hugely helpful, not just for Bournemouth, but for coming into March and April. Wrap him up in cotton wool, I'm sure will be Mikel Arteta's view.
You do want those extra goals, though, because 2-0 can become 2-1, can become a very scary, frantic last 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
A goal difference as well with City.
Well, yeah, that's very true. That is very true. The third goal from Martin Odegaard, I really like this finish, actually, because he's had a couple of moments in the last few weeks where he's had chances on his left foot and they haven't been taken as clinically as you know his talent can normally do. You know, there was one at Everton where he put it over the bar. I think they scored a few minutes later. But this was lovely, I think, the way Xhaka played in Trossard. Trossard, who has been really effective in the last couple of games. Arteta spoke about it a bit afterwards, the not quite unlocking of Martinelli, but how it allows Martinelli to operate and to move from outside to in, which I think he enjoys doing and does so very effectively. Trossard pulls it back for Odegaard, using the weight of the ball with his right foot just to guide it into the net. Lovely movement, lovely pass, lovely finish. And just the sort of goal that I think the performance deserved. And Odegaard's now on, I think, 9 goals, which when you consider some of the criticisms of him, he doesn't shoot enough, isn't clinical enough. And, you know, I think he would say himself, he probably should have 2 or 3 more goals to his name this season, not least the one against Aston Villa. you know, it's another telling contribution from the captain.
Yeah, it's been a curious few weeks for him where, above all else, I've just felt like his ball striking it's been a little bit off. I mean, the most obvious example of that, as you say, was the Villa goal. But, you know, passes that Odegaard would normally sort of deliver to you and you'd almost not even have to control them because they've been judged so perfectly, were either just coming a bit heavy or a bit light. And that really changed in the second half. I got the sense that this was a half of football for Odegaard and for Arsenal where a little bit of the tension eased. I don't think either of the games against Villa or Leicester were ideal opportunities for any of these players to enjoy their football. you know, there was fighting spirit. There was some degree, I mean, there was a significant degree of dominance against Leicester, but it was not the most fun. The passes weren't always clicking together. And I think, I mean, yeah, the goal is beautifully taken, and there's so many other moments that the Premier League can't delete off social media quickly enough. Absolutely baffling.
Isn't it?
Let
the
us
most,
see the slide tackle.
Isn't
click.
It the most counterintuitive thing? Like, I get, you know, there are rights and there are rights holders and there are all those kinds of things, but as a, like, you couldn't pay for marketing that good where you've got like hundreds of people just going, oh my God, look what this player did in the Premier League. And it goes beyond football fans. It goes everywhere because these clips get so many views. Like they're, you know, it crosses all borders, if you like, where people can go, that is incredible. And I don't know if it's like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut kind of a thing, because they have to sort of take down everything that goes up, goals and whatever it might be. But it was a bit like the same with the World Cup as well, where there were these moments in the World Cup that you're looking at going, Jesus, this is like, just spread it all around the world and let people see, people who don't love football or who don't know football, let them see things like this and go, hey, you know what? This could be quite fun. The bit you're talking about is the slide tackle, Cruyff turn, back flick, whatever. I don't know what to call it because I've never seen it.
It's literally the sort of thing that I would show to my fiance, and she would sort of go, yeah, that's quite good, James. And then like go on with her day to day life. But at some stage, I know she'd be thinking, yeah, it was actually quite good, to be fair, I have to say.
Who is this blonde Adonis?
No, that's, we don't need her thinking about that. She has a blonde fiance. She doesn't need anyone else. I think it's all the more baffling that obviously this is a game that wasn't televised in the UK. So it's not Sky and BT and that lot. They can't even show it. They can't clip it up for social. Like, I mean, there's other sports do this so much better. The NBA is one where when you wake up in the morning, you can't help but have these three pointers or these dunks thrown in your face. And it's a great way of marketing the league. I mean, yeah, let the world see Martin Ødegaard in full flow and wait. I mean, also, if anyone from Arsenal socials listening to this, I'm sure they will already have clipped it up and be ready and raring to go with their tweets. And I will be liking and I will be retweeting the shit out of it.
All right. Well, look, here's a great thing that one of our Discord users, his name is Robotten. He said, after we win the ball from Odegaard's Cruyff sliding tackle, we do not lose the ball and make 19 passes before Gabriel Martinelli makes it 4-0 1 minute and 10 seconds later, and every outfield player except Big Gabby touches the ball. I mean, this is the sort of...
Isn't that sort of...
It makes that fourth goal all the more beautiful when you look at it in the cold light of day. It starts with that exceptional moment from Martin Odegaard. The team passed the ball around. On the commentary, I think it's Andy Townsend who was on the commentary I was watching with Peter Drury, and he's saying, oh, well, yeah, the Everton lads, they're doing the sensible thing. They're just getting back into shape here. And all of a sudden, Nketiah makes a move. Zinchenko finds the pass. Little ball to the near post, and Gabriel Martinelli nutmegs Jordan Pickford to make it 4-0. Just beautiful. And I've got a sort of follow-up question on this with regards to the kind of football that Arsenal are playing at the moment. But you this is where maybe the value of social media and things like that come into play afterwards, because you watch that in real time and you go, yeah, that was good, really like that. But then when someone analyzes it, when someone examines it and goes into the nuts and bolts of it and how involved everybody on that pitch was, apart from poor Big Gabby, although he did give a very generous round of applause to Martin Odegaard when he did that. That's a pre-assist. He'll give him that. You know, it's just a brilliant goal, a great way to wrap up the scoring on what was a really, really good night for Arsenal.
Oh, it's fantastic. And what you love about those goals, and Arsenal have scored a few. My suspicion is that's not even the most passes they've had leading to a goal this season. I swear there was one that was around the 21-22 mark, which shows you something about how elegant the football is.
Mm.
But there's always so many little things you can take away from it. I thought for me, Nketiah's involvement, almost more valuable than him scoring a goal, much as I doubt he, I don't know what he would think. It wouldn't shock me if he doesn't agree. But just to show that he can contribute in build-up as a substitute, which I think were both things that we had questions about, you know, can Nketiah be as effective off the bench? We necessarily didn't see that against Leicester. I thought for me that was a really encouraging aspect. But obviously, you know, when you watch this back, it's like, take your pick. Martinelli now, 11 goals. Like, and going back to what you were saying about Ødegaard, you've almost got this... I imagine Arsene Wenger is very much smiling at seeing all the players off the striker finally deliver the 10-plus goals that he said every season was what his team needed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a... You know, I was doing a little bar chart of where all the goals are coming from, and it's there's a very pleasant race between Ødegaard, Saka, and Martinelli for top scorer. And you never know, maybe Gabriel Jesus will throw his hat into the ring in a few weeks.
Eddie's on 9 as well. You know, I know he hasn't scored in the last few weeks, but, you know, in all competitions, he's got 9 goals too. So, you know, like you say, Martinelli, 11, Saka, 10, Ødegaard and Nketiah on 9. You know, Arsenal are looking maybe at getting four players well into double figures.
That is how a team like City won the league before they had Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
It is a formula that works. I mean, we don't know if it will work, because it would certainly help to have an Erling Haaland as well. I mean, I think when Jesus comes back, he probably will get double figures as well. I mean, that is excellent and a really encouraging sign, and shows Arsenal can... It gives you the sense that there's always going to be a player that has the game that can win you the match. And I think that is massive for Arsenal as they try and get the... however many wins they need.
So, having shaken off those shackles and played really well in that second half, and, you know, not quite looking ahead to Bournemouth, I'm sort of curious as to your thoughts on the overall development of this team and the type of football that they play. And I was reminded of Mikel Arteta's first interview when he was asked, what kind of philosophy do you have? And he said, there are some things that have to be a blueprint. We have to have passion. We have to be dominant. We have to be aggressive. We have to play in the opponent's territory as much as we want. I want the ball. I want to attack them as much as possible. I want to prevent them from attacking me as much as possible. There have been periods where it's been hard to see exactly how that was going to happen under Mikel Arteta. But it's fair to say, I think, that we are well and truly there now, which isn't to say that Arsenal are the finished product by any means. I think there's still a way to go. I think we can still improve. But this is very much a team in the, how do you say it? Like, this is what the manager's vision was when he came in. How he was going to get there, how long it was going to take him to get there, I'm sure he was unsure about all those things. But he always knew where he wanted to go.
The word that really strikes me there, maybe it's because they have it up on the big screen at the Emirates, and in some new montage they've added, because everyone adds new montages once every month, is aggression.
Yeah.
And I think we always think of aggression as an off-the-ball concept, and we see so much of that in the assertive, forward, front-footed way that Gabriel, Saliba and Ben White and the like defend. But I think there's a part of aggression that is just the wave after wave of purposeful, fast, quick moving attacking football that snaps at defenses and tires them out, wears them out physically and emotionally. And I saw so many signs of that in the second half, as much as it was sort of being played out to this very relaxed, you know, the Ole football, quite literally. There is a real sense that once Arsenal get at you, they don't stop. And frankly, they didn't stop until the 90th minute here. That to me is probably the thing that's most, feels like a biggest culture shift in terms of where Arsenal were before Arteta and where they are now. And I think stands them in the best stead for the next 14 games and the years. Is it 14 or 13? And the years to come is that, you know, right now, and if you compare it to how Pep Guardiola viewed his team a few weeks back, I think there's just that thing when nothing feels like it's quite enough for Arsenal. You know, whether that is the 3-4 forwards in the race for their own scoring golden boot within the club, whether it is, you know, always wanting to get that extra goal, never kind of willingly accepting a clean sheet, never accepting sloppiness like we saw from Saliba and Gabriel at the King Power. That is a really propulsive force for Arsenal Football Club. I think it's the thing that I always wondered if Arteta would be able to do, because I always felt it was quite ingrained within Arsenal that it was quite a comfortable club. I don't get the sense it's comfortable.
No.
In the best way possible. I don't get the sense it's comfortable anymore.
No, I agree. And like, there's a moment right at the very end where Aaron Ramsdale desperate to keep his clean sheet, yeah. makes a brilliant save, then makes another recovery save. Like, the don't think Davies made the most of that. But who's there to clear the ball away? Gabriel Martinelli, who's come back from the, you know, way upfield on the right wing because he moved to the right when Smith Rowe came on. You know, that, I think that tells you plenty about the commitment that he's getting from these players. Just a couple of quick things to finish. Good to see Emile Smith Rowe get some minutes. These are going to be important over the coming weeks because the schedule will ramp up. There is Europe to contend with now as well. So using the squad to the maximum possible is going to be a key part of how we keep our form going domestically while competing in Europe. And, you know, he's been a long time out, really. You know, Smith Rowe only played a few minutes at the start of the season. He's been out ever since. But good to see him get back, look a bit lively. I think the touch isn't quite there yet, but that will come with games.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly will. It has been a tough time for Smith Rowe, who so often in games when it's not quite going right for Arsenal, you get the sense that he could be a player off the bench or in the starting 11 that could just offer something a little bit different in terms of committing opponents and drip. He is, I mean, it's hard to say when you've got Saka and Martinelli, but he is certainly up there with the best dribblers in the club and has a slightly different way of beating them. He also has that quality that, again, Ødegaard has to an extent, but when the ball drops on the edge of the box, and certainly did last season, Smith Rowe was so often there with that low-placed finish into the bottom corner. Arsenal will almost certainly need him. There will almost certainly be a game in the Premier League where his impact makes a profound difference. And yeah, it's perfect timing because I would assume he will figure from the off in at least one of those Sporting games. I mean, the first leg is coming around quite soon. And it wouldn't shock me if Arteta goes fairly strong on that one. But yeah, a big, big, big boost because it's a tough March, and especially April.
For sure.
Coming up.
The last thing I just wanted to touch on was something quite interesting from the press conference, where I think it was Art DeRoche was asking about, there was a previous question about Trossard unlocking Martinelli, and Arteta spoke about Martinelli and Vieira. They have like this friendship because they're so close, blah, blah, blah. And Art said something like, we haven't really seen them play very close together on the pitch. And he interjected, Arteta. He very rarely does that. He interjected and said, you will. You will. And, you know, they carried on. And then you can see the answer that he gives in the transcript. But we've seen him enter games for Granit Xhaka. And, you know, this, I don't want to make this like Vieira must replace Xhaka or Vieira is the Xhaka replacement. You know, that's not a conversation I think we need to have. But clearly, it seems that Mikel Arteta views Vieira as somebody whose influence and readiness for football at this level is growing. And when he says Martinelli and Vieira, you will see them play close together, Martinelli's going to play on the left.
Yeah.
Which means that the Xhaka position is where you would envisage Vieira playing close to him, unless you sort of decided to make him into another Zinchenko or something, who knows. But it's an interesting one to consider because, you know, the physical profile of the players is very different, but on the ball, maybe Vieira just gives you a little more nimbleness, if that's the right way of expressing that. And again, I'm not downplaying Xhaka or saying, you know, we've got to get rid of him or anything like that. But I'm just thinking, you know, when you see a player start to get introduced in a certain position and it starts to happen, you know, every week, every week, every week, it suggests that there's a little bit of a plan there.
Yeah. The first thing I'd want to say is, as ever, Art asks really good questions. So I want a bit of a shout out for a friend of mine there as it's come up. Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting to see Arteta dive in there because there was a time quite recently where Arteta was maybe apologising for Vieira or explaining away. And I think there are perfectly reasonable explanations there. He has come to a new league, a physical league, and he has never been and probably never will be a player that you would trust in a 50-50 or you would trust jockeying with an opponent. But very notably, And he is asked a lot about Vieira. He has stopped kind of explaining why he's not selecting Vieira and sort of indicated why he's going to select him very soon.
Mm.
Maybe the Bournemouth game, a game where you would kind of think that Arsenal could really assert their will and play 60% of the game in the Bournemouth third of the pitch, would be perfect for him as a player that can just unlock, that can interlink.
Mm.
And he will give you something different. We see it often that as much as Xhaka sometimes plays at centre forward and sometimes plays, I mean, God, this guy does play everywhere, at left back and sometimes plays, you know, as a left central midfielder. Radical concept. You do see Xhaka as well pushing out wide onto that left touchline. I wonder if that might be an idea that Arteta has in his mind with Vieira. I don't want to sort of put everything in this thing of Pep's done it, so Arteta must like it, because they are more different than people give them credit for.
Mm.
But like last season, it was really notable, and before, how often Bernardo Silva was kind of almost used as this outside, you know, sticking himself very wide on the left flank from a nominal left eight position. Seems to me that that would be a great use of a lot of Vieira's skill sets, his crossing, his ability to interlink, and his nice little burst of pace. So, yeah, I'm really excited for the moment that it does happen. And it seems from what Arteta's saying that it's coming soon. Maybe it'll be against Bournemouth, maybe it'll be in the Europa League. But
yeah.
It's going to happen sooner or later. And obviously this was kind of the plan all along when they signed it.
Yeah, look, it's exciting to think about the team having a bit more variation and how that variation might be deployed, not just in the Europa League, but how it might change the dynamic of games depending on who we're facing, or if we need to change something in a game, having these options from the bench, as we've said all season long, will be absolutely vital. Look, we better leave it there. As ever, great to talk to you, James. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much indeed to James. You can find him on Twitter. He is at James Benge, at James Benge. So that is just about that for this particular episode. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you're enjoying being 5 points clear at the top of the table. We do have Bournemouth to come this weekend, another home game. As I said, we'll preview that over on Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. But we will make it free and available to everybody on Friday, just to make sure that you have something to listen to. So until then, take it easy, enjoy your Thursday, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers, bye-bye.
There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.